most influential MMA podcast known to man.
Are you ready?
Coming at ya! Welcome to another edition of Amp Radio, another MMA podcast. We're coming at you live and unedited from the mean streets of Danville, California, Brantford, Ontario, Canada. Let's meet our host, guys. Spidey out of the blue corner. With me, as always, of course, the yin to my yang, Proteus. And we have Brian from Boston. How about that, Proteus? Woo! Hit the music. Brian from Boston, hit it.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me on the most influential MMA podcast known to man.
That's right. Gosh darn it. You know what? I influence my golden retriever Lucky all the time. All right, let's meet the man up north. This is the man that always has inside jokes with strangers. The one and only Prados. Hit it, hoser.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, wait, that's not correct. What's up? How are you guys doing this evening?
Well, gentlemen, we're going to talk the night that was UFC Fight Night 114.
Hated it.
All right, let's get it. Bonuses awarded. Performance of the night. Nico Price, Humberto Bandone, Dustin Ortiz, and Joseph Morales. To the prelims we go, guys. The UFC Fight Night that was. Stop me if you guys want to talk about this. We start off with the lightweight, which of course was replayed. Jordan Rinaldi defeats Alvaro Herrera via decision. The dreaded Von Flew, which Misha, to the flyweight we go. Joseph Morales defeats Robert Sanchez via submission, rear naked choke. Both of those gentlemen in the first. Keep in mind, we had 7 first round finishes.
Crazy.
Prelim card we go, guys. To the Batman weight we go is a shout-out to Danny Otto of Automatic 253 at Danny Otto. Joseph Quinones defeated Diego Rivas via submission. Unanimous decision there, guys. To the Bantam weight we go again. My wife's favorite, Hani Yaya, defeated, and I'm being facetious. Henry Briones via submission. First round, 201 into it. To the flyweight we go, and this one... You know what, Brian and I always talk about the flyweights. We'll get into that just in a bit, but we're not too excited about the flyweights. You know why, Proteus? Because no one fights like Dustin Ortiz. Dustin Ortiz defeats Hector Sandoval. KO, 15 seconds into the first. And to the middleweight, we went the Joker, which may be on your show, Proteus. Jack Hermanson defeated Brad Scott via TKO in the first. 3 minutes and 50 seconds into it. Gentlemen, we start off with you, Brian. Do you want to chat about any one of these fights before we go to the main card?
You know what? I'd like to touch on two if I could. So the first one being Jordan Rinaldi with the Von Flew choke. Every time another fighter is about to go out via Von Flew choke, you can hear Joe Rogan sitting cage side warning the fighter, be careful of Von Flew choke, be careful of Von Flew choke. And sure enough, when that fighter just doesn't get that arm out of there, they fall victim to the Von Flew choke. So I always enjoy a good Von Flew choke, man.
That's what she says. We go to you, Proteus. Any one of the prelim fights, and I know that you didn't really get into much of the prelims because, frankly, like you said, it was a kind of a forgettable card, I think it's fair to say, guys. Not joking. Any one of these, because you actually sent me a text, Cody. You said, did you just see that? Think you said, did you just happen to see that? Which was Dustin Ortiz smoking poor Hector Sandoval.
Yeah, that is definitely the fight I want to start with. But Brian, you said you had 2 fights and you only mentioned 1. Is there a second fight that you wanted to put out there?
Yes, sir. Sorry. I like when I start watching fights and I'm not 100% familiar with the fighters. I may have seen them 1 or 2 times. After each fight, I sort of say to myself, do I want to see this guy again? And the fighters that kind of stuck out to me for that were Jack Romance and the Joker. He's a guy that I want to see again. I like that aggressive. Can't tell at this point just how high the ranking he's going to come, but I put him in my category of like to see that guy fight again. And also point out, I failed to mention Ronny Yahya earlier. I am fascinated with top of the food chain jiu-jitsu players, and this kid is top of the food chain jiu-jitsu. The fact that you can get a professional fighter choked out within, you know, 2 minutes, for me, is amazing. So I did enjoy the Joker fight. I enjoyed Ronny Yahya and the Rinaldi thing. I enjoyed it because of the food choke kid. I said we got again.
Yeah, and just to follow up with that, sorry, Tony.
Go ahead, bro.
One thing I did notice about the Hermansson fight, I was looking at it when he did win, and I was like, geez, there's another killer, you know, out of that northeastern kind of, you know, area where we see, yeah, you tell me, I'll tell you, Tony, I cannot remember the gentleman's name right now, Volkan. Ozdemir. I mean, they're both from, both from the same country, I believe, right? Because Volkan.
Hermansson's Swedish, right?
Right. He's originally from Sweden, but he's fighting out of Norway. Anyways, one thing I did note is that we're seeing a lot of killers coming out of that part of the world, and as we've seen in history, they have a good fight caliber coming out of that part of the world. Anyways, getting back to what my spotlight fight of the night, which I did say on. Smack My Picks Up, but also when we did Hold the Line with Showtime on Friday, it was Saturday morning. Gosh, it's so confusing nowadays. Dustin Ortiz coming out and looking, you know, just amazing. As you mentioned, Tony, you know, these guys don't usually do that. You know, the 125ers, they don't really show that well, but man, you can't beat, you know, the record tying knockout. It was amazing, and I as you said, I did send you a message. I was blown out of my mind. I thought, you know what, this is going to be the fight of the night, and they did. They got a performance of the night, and we've as did Hermansson in the next fight that we were just talking about. So some good fights leading into the main card. Really enjoyed it.
You know, yeah, one thing that I failed to do. Go ahead,
sorry, it wasn't a bond burner of a card, but the fights were good. You know, they were good. I enjoyed the fights that I watched. There was, you know, KOs and decisions and submissions. So again, is it going to set the MMA world on fire? Probably not. But there were some good solid fights on that card.
Well, let me ask you this, gentlemen. On that same note, keeping with that theme. And Brian, we're going to get into, I actually messed up because I couldn't pull up I'm having issues with the Blog Talk, so I couldn't pull up we usually do a write-up show notes that we have, so I usually go off of that. And so I didn't get to go off of that. But speaking of which, so that same theme in mind, Brian says it was a pretty compelling card. I agree with him because it was free. But I certainly would not pay for this card. And guess what, guys? We have another card that's coming up that's going to be a pay-per-view that I'm not sure is worth paying for either. But let's go to let me ask you this, Brian. You saw this fight. Keep in mind, free, right? Fight Pass, we have to pay $8 a month,
yep.
Right? But everything else was free. And thank God for Proteus. It wasn't on FXX, his favorite channel. But it was the FS1 prelims, the Fight Pass prelims, and, of course, on FS1, the main card. Let me ask you this, Brian. Would you have paid for this fight, kid? Would you have seriously paid for this fight if it was let's just say if this was UFC 214 and a half?
Not a chance.
That's fair.
No. I could not pay money for the star power that was on this. I judge pay-per-views by... If I can't go to bed knowing that there's a sensational fight on television, I have to pay for it. These fights, right. I certainly could have lived without. Again, good fights, but not where I can take away $60 from the family to pay for these fights.
Let me ask you a question, Brian. Let me ask you a question, Brian, because with Dana White's contender series, we're really hearing a lot of, you know, buzz about them. Would you pay, if it was on Fight Pass for this card, would that be kind of something that you would be okay with paying your $10 and having that included in your Fight Pass?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I currently pay for Fight Pass right now, and I think at $10 a month, the content is good to spend that money. So I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable with that.
So what I'm thinking, Tony, is when we spoke earlier about this, you know, I said there wasn't very much. Wasn't very much that I remembered. You know, looking back on the card and now that we're doing the show, I remember a lot more of the fights and the impressive performances, but it wasn't something that had a lot of star power for me, as Brian was saying. Now, what we're seeing on the question is, what are we trying to see on Fox now? Because this card, not very strong. This probably would have been a Fight Pass card had they not had fights to fill. And I don't know. I don't know whether or not, you know, they're going to renew with Fox or they're not going to renew with Fox. So it's interesting to see, you know, not only, you know, myself as a hardcore fan, but Brian from Boston, it's good to have the conversation about what we're willing to pay for, what we're not willing to pay for, what kind of caliber cards we're getting, and where they need to be in the future. I've always said, Brian, I apologize for running the table here right for a second, but I've always said that if they made Fight Pass a more of a destination, which they seem to be doing again as we come out of this Fox deal, they seem to be making Fight Pass somewhere where you need to see the fights, like the Dana White's Contender Series, like I just said, and like maybe throwing something like this on, where we're building stars. You may not know their names right now, but you may know them in the future. Tony, I can't remember where I was going with that or if there was a question in there originally. So if you want to refresh my memory, that'd be great.
No. That's exactly what we were talking about. The thing is, would we pay for this type of fight, which we've seen quite a bit on FS1? Proteus contends, Brian, that if we had something similar to what the WWE is doing, where all in content, all online, all on demand, let's just say 10 bucks a month, 14 bucks a month, but you get all the pay-per-views. Is that something that would pique your interest at that point?
Absolutely. Yeah, it absolutely would. Because it's getting hard to have pay-per-view with the frequency of them. Now, I voiced it on MMA Junkie Radio. I had a problem with spending money on 213, and I have a problem with spending money on 215.
Right.
214, boy, that's what I remember. That's what I remember getting excited about UFC pay-per-views. Almost every fight on 214 was a fight that you absolutely couldn't miss. You know, a couple of those fights on 213, I could live with it. You know, I can miss them.
Sure.
215, I can miss those fights. So I would like to see them get back to those power-packed pay-per-views, up-and-comers, star power. Just give me the fights that we want to see, you know, like John Jones versus DC. How great was that? Woodley versus Maya on paper was a very intriguing matchup. Cowboy Cerrone versus Robbie Lawler. I mean, I will talk to complete strangers about those type of fights because I get so excited about them. You know, Sergio Pettis versus Brendan Moreno. I'll watch a fight. It's a nice fight, but it's not going to get my blood flowing.
So Brian, one more quick question on this particular subject. If we saw say like the majority of the shows, we have a bulk of shows on say Fight Pass, maybe on, you know, the cable, some kind of cable provider, and we cut down the pay-per-views to like we used to have in the old days, you know, 6 or 7 where we could really build them. We could really think about them and put them on in that kind of fashion, like we used to see. That would be more interesting, right? That would be more manageable for your pocketbook, correct?
Agreed, sir.
Job done here, Tony. Move on.
Let's talk about this, however, because we're talking about the old days. And before we got on the air, Brian and Proteus and I were talking about the old Marco Hua's days, right? The Pride days. So let's get into this, Brian, because we have you here as a guest host. Let's hear it. Talk to me about your journey into MMA. Were you always an MMA fan? Were you a boxing fan that got into this? Tell me how you got into MMA.
I was the biggest boxing fan on the planet. My friends would go out on a Saturday night, going out bar hopping. If there was any sort of boxing match, I would stay in and stay home and watch it. And I remember the heydays of your Mike Tyson's, Lennox Lewis, Riddick Bowe, Razor Ruddock. And you had Oscar De La Hoya, Roy Jones, Sweet Pea Whitaker, Chavez. There were stars in almost every weight category. And then one night I stumbled across this UFC one, and I will never forget it. And it was a savant kicker. I won't do his name justice, but Sparta Gordeaux versus the sumo wrestler with the last, T-U-L-I. And I didn't know what a savant kicker was. I'm like, boy, this is intriguing. I know what a sumo wrestler does. And this is the one where the savant kicker landed a kick to the side of his face, and the sumo's tooth went, the sumo wrestler's tooth went flying out into the audience. After that, oh my God, that's the first time I saw it. And after that fight, I remember turning off the TV for about a minute going, what is this? What have I just stumbled onto? And I was hooked from that day. Your fighters like Oleg Taktarov, who could take a beating, to your Tank Abbotts and to Gracie and Severin and Marco Huhas and early Vitor Belfort and early Wanderlei Silva was like one of the scariest humans on the planet. And I was fascinated by the different styles of matchups. And I have to be quite honest. I love Joe Rogan, and I thought Joe Rogan has brought a lot to MMA, and I love listening to that guy call fights. And then when I hear him call the old fights, and it brings back memories. So I can probably say I'd be shocked if I have missed more than 5 big cards over the last 20 something years. I'm fascinated with the sport.
Yeah. And Brian, there's so many questions I want to ask you, but I agree with you with what you say about Joe Rogan. I do appreciate everything he's given to the sport, and I do appreciate everything he continues to give to the sport, because he is a gigantic person in the sport right now. I mean, even if you're not an MMA fan, if you're just listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, you're going to get some MMA in your life. You're going to get some jiu-jitsu, or you're going to get some boxing talk. So I agree with you. He's been very influential. However, I think that, and I said this, I think it was Wednesday, Tony. Was it Wednesday? No, it was Sunday, last Sunday. That I think Joe Rogan is kind of one foot out the door right now. And that's just because he's just doing too much. I don't think that he doesn't love the sport. I don't think that he just doesn't want to be there. I just think that, his time is probably up, and it's time to move on to other hosts or people to take the sport on. But my question, you mentioned fighters, and I would love for you to tell that story that you told us before we got on the air about your wife and yourself.
Oh, that was a good one.
If you could just remember that. So fighters or fights from the past that you can remember that stick out in your head that made you more and more an MMA fan.
The fight that sticks out to me the most, and my wife for that matter, was Marco Huhas versus Paul Varlins. And Marco Huhas was drilling, I want to say it was a right leg kick into the thigh of Paul Varlins. And I think this is before these guys learned how to check kicks, because Paul Varlins just kept walking forward and walking forward. And Marco Huhas was lighting that leg up. And I can't quite remember, it was around 2 or round 3 that his leg finally gave in. And Marco Huhas finished him. And my wife and I, like, if we like messing around and we fake kick, we call it a hoo-haas. Like, oh, that guy just got hoo-haas. So that fight stands out to me. And another fight, if I could run a fight in my house on the loop, I would run Don Fry versus Yoshihiro. Just that 4 to 5 minutes of action on the loop.
That's...
I mean, I know it's not like technically the greatest MMA fight of all time, but how does that fight not get you going? So
yeah.
Those are the two that stand out to me the most. And I enjoyed, you know, I enjoyed Tank Abbott and his pit fighting style. I loved all that stuff.
The early days.
Brian, let me ask you this. How'd you find the boys at MMA Junkie? Because you're one, and Proteus is going to kill me when we start talking flyweights, because he knows how I feel about flyweights. Well, not about them specifically, but just the style of fighting. But talk to me about MMA Junkie. How'd you become a junkie? How'd you find the boys, et cetera?
So for a living, I'm in sales. So I'm constantly in the car. And terrestrial radio, I can't listen to. Now, I live in a fantastic sports market, you know, as Boston is. So we have two local sports station here. But I can only listen to a half hour of Deflategate talk, not hour after hour after hour of Deflategate and, you know, how handsome Tom is. Agreed, Tom is handsome, but I just can't talk about it, you know, on and on. So I ended up picking up satellite radio. You know, it's got a lot of great music. Yeah, he is. He's the best. And I just stumbled across, I want to say it was, I don't even know if the show is still on. Was it The Fight Club? Yeah, so that was the first show that I stumbled onto. And then I kind of just locked in that station because I was shocked that there were people on the radio talking about MMA. So I ended up just kind of locking that dial into my Sirius satellite radio, and I listened to their show for a little bit. And then during the day, MMA Junkie came on. And at the risk of sounding like a kiss ass, I never met those two gentlemen. But I really liked them. I love their show style. I like them as people. I get the feeling that they're really, really good guys. And I like the fact that they don't have a crazy ego. And they always have to be the expert. And they allow, you know, callers like ourselves to go on there and express our opinions and show some personality. And they let us talk a little bit. It's not like you'll say one thing and then boom, they slam the phone down and they move on. So they right away became my favorite show. And I just decided to, if I'm going to talk MMA, I'm going to talk MMA with them. I don't call into the other shows. I mean, I do listen to the other ones. I do like Brian Stan, toe to toe. I think Brian Stan's show, he always comes prepared. He's always knowledgeable. I'll listen to Michael Bisping show from time to time, but he's not as prepared as Brian Stan is. But getting back to MMA Junkie, you know, when they were on live, it was like the best 2 hours of my day when I'm in my car, you know, out visiting customers. I would just drive around and listen to the boys. And I think there's a lot of really, really good, knowledgeable, smart callers that call into that show.
Well, 100%. I mean, I've been listening to that show for 10 years. And it, you know what, Brian, it's great to hear somebody say that they found Junkie through Sirius XM, because that's never where I really listen to them, but I know Marco does as well. And it's just good to hear that we have acquired new fans, and that people are upset, because when Sirius took them off live for the 2 hours, I was very upset. Marco was very upset, and, you know, it's just not the same without them. So, but I said, you know, they will continue on. They will continue to do what they're doing, what they've always done. You know, they've always been their own entity. They've always put out the shows 5 days a week, no matter what. And, you know, they are definitely unique. I mean, nobody in the industry does what they do. And I just want to get your feedback, because I don't know if you've been listening to them as long as I have, but they recently acquired a very big milestone. You know what I mean? Like, we can only aspire to try and get to where they are. And you don't have to apologize for getting on their dicks. I do that all the time, especially when I call, because it's great. So you don't have to worry about that at all. I don't remember where I was going with this question, but that's right. They came out across a huge milestone, and I don't know if, as a new-ish fan, what that means to you. So kind of give us your thoughts on them having so many shows and, you know, giving us a show 5 days a week.
Here's what I like most about it is I want to say it was 2,500 shows, and they get a lot of positive feedback from the listeners. Like, MMA junkies, that's the best terminology, because we are junkies for this, and I'm a junkie for that show. So I like to see good things happen to good people, and I would really like good things to happen to those two gentlemen. I was born and raised in a town called Lowell, Massachusetts, and I don't know if you remember the movie called The Fighter. It was a movie based off of Mickey Ward, and Mark Wahlberg played Mickey Ward, the fighter, and Christian Bale played Mickey Ward's brother. And Mickey was a boxer from Lowell who was a very, very humble, hardworking kid. And it took him a long, long time to raise up to stardom. Have you ever seen, this is a boxing match, have you ever seen Mickey Ward versus Gaddy One? They fought three times.
That's why there was three, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, it was one of the greatest fights that I've ever seen. So when Mickey finally experienced all the success that he had through his own boxing career and then the movie, I was happy for him as well. So I like to see good things happen to good people. And I get the impression those two guys are good people. And I really would like them back on Serious Live. This is supposed to be the combat station. Well, there's some programming on there right now that's not very combat related. So I think it's sort of sending a mixed message. And far be it from me, I'm not bashing any other show or anything else that people do. But boy, they have a great show. I can't imagine that there's not an avenue to have them on, live.
Brian, let's talk about this, because you did mention, and by the way, we're not going to bring up the Cox Bridge, right? And Merrimack River. Let's talk about this, Brian, because you brought up your favorite fighters. And you mentioned a lot of fighters that are, of course, from the Pride and early UFC days. Who are your favorite fighters right now? Like, if you could name three fighters, current fighters, that you like on the UFC. Well, you know what? It doesn't even have to be the UFC roster. It could be the Bellator roster. Let's give them some love. Who are three people that you would pay to see, male, female? Who are three people that you would pay to see?
Well, I don't think this is going to come as any shock to anybody. As a fighter, John Jones. They talk about a Mount Rushmore of fighters right now. There's only one person up on that. On that Mount Rushmore, and that's Mr. Jones. He just seems head and shoulders above everybody else. I have grown to really like DC, Daniel Cormier. When he first hit the scene, I wasn't a huge fan of him. I didn't really get into his fighting style. But the more I learned about him as a person, and the more I watched him fight and grow as a fighter, he's become one of my favorite fighters. Another fighter that I love to watch that I'm absolutely scared of taking a leg kick from is Edwin Barbosa. That guy's leg kicks are some of the most frightening things I've ever seen. And I do not want to get hit in the head by AJ. So off the top of my head, those are some of my favorite fighters. And and if I'm being honest as well, I used to truly enjoy, now an in-shape Frank Mir. Towards the tail end of his career, I felt he was coming in to his fights a little too heavy, but I enjoyed a lot of Frank Mir fights when he was in shape. I don't think he gets the recognition or as much credibility as he should, because he was a fantastic champion and a great fighter when he showed up in shape. I think I've said that like three times now.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that for a second. Let's talk about that for a second, Brian, because we had Angela Reyes on last Wednesday. We follow him at Reyes Striking. And I asked him about Frank Mir. You know, I asked him about, you know, whether or not, you know, what he saw going forward with Frank. And we talked about his broadcasting career. But the one thing that I thought was very interesting, Brian, I don't know if you heard this interview with Ariel Helwani on the Fortnite. But one thing that I did note is that Frank did mention that he could go back to the doctor again. And I guess he's meaning that he can get back on that TRT. So I just wonder what Frank's career is going to look like, you know, moving forward. And I wonder whether or not, that TRT was affecting his, you know, because you said he came in overweight sometimes. I wonder what his next, you know, stage of his career is going to look like. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Now, I'm getting the impression he's not re-signing with UFC. Is that correct?
He has gotten his release. Yeah, he's no longer a UFC employee.
Well, I think if he goes over to Bellator, there's some very favorable matchups for him. Again, if he comes in under 260, if he comes in under 250, then I like Frank Mir in most of those fights. Anything up over 250, I just feel that the cardio wasn't there. But I think he could do some damage in the Bellator heavyweights.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we don't have a champion over there yet, and I think that Matt Mitrione is the uncrowned UFC champ over there in Bellator right now. But what do you think? What do you think, though? I mean, if he can get swayed over to, you know, Japan or something like that, where he can really go crazy, do you think that we see, you know, like an Uber Frank Mir come out, like Uberine at all?
Oh boy, like as big as Alistair?
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I would hope not. I would hope that we wouldn't see that. You know, I would like the all natural Frank Mir would be my preference.
Brian, let me ask you this: could we broach this subject quickly? Obviously, Tough 26 is coming out, and I'm a big fan of anything, I guess, women's MMA, and definitely, I actually kind of like when they bring in newer style people to the UFC. Of course, people will have to be cut, and that's the one thing that no one talks about, especially with, you know, Dana White's Contender Series. But Tough 26 has been revealed. A lot of Gigi brought this up today. I don't know if you were listening, but a lot of 500 or a lot of let's just say less than stellar records on that show. Will you tune in to Tough 26, and what do you think of the quality of fighters that are going into the Tough 26 household?
You know, I haven't been paying as much attention to the Tough series as I did in the past. When they first came out, I watched them religiously. And I think I watched them all the time because there was less MMA content to be found
right. Anywhere.
So that's where I went looking for it. With the amount of MMA, you know, that you can find online, on Fox, on pay-per-view, and then you can mix in some Bellator and some lion fighting, I don't really put a ton of focus on the Tough shows anymore. So I guess I'll just have to wait till they have the Tough fight nights and view from there.
Yeah, I had the same conversation, Brian. I had the same kind of conversation with Dave Madden. We're just kind of oversaturated, I think. You know what I mean? If you're an MMA fan, you might be a little oversaturated. However, you know, it's still good to have content, and they need to provide content for the people that they need to provide content for. So I guess that's why we're seeing a lot more shows, a lot more ideas being tried. But my question to you real quickly, because I've got one more question for you, Brian, before we get on to other things. What do you think about the Performance Institute? Because this seems to have been, in my opinion, a big topic. I'm very interested in seeing where it goes, what the UFC can do to kind of, I want to say placate. I don't know if that's the correct word, but I mean, what they can do to appease, maybe that's a better word, their fighters with
this. Yeah, that's a better word.
yeah. Appease their fighters with this institute, because the fighters, if you're on the UFC roster, there are a lot of things that you can take advantage of, i.e. meals, you know, three times a day provided for you, specially designed for you, the most top-notch knowledge, you know, for physiotherapy, for, you know, you get the drift. It's the highest institute that we have in MMA. What do you think moving forward is the effect of this institute on the sport?
Here's what I hope. After the fights, I usually look forward to the next day or two coming out where they reveal the fighter's salaries. I am shocked sometimes at how little these fighters make. You can watch a fight where it's a three-round war, and then you'll see that one guy got $16,000 and then maybe $2,500 from Reebok. Anything that can make these fighters' lives easier, keep them safer, give them where they don't have to spend a ton of their own money for training, I'm all for. I would love to see some sort of balance where the people that own the UFC can continue to make money at the rate they are, but get some of these fighters some more money. I just don't know how you can pay a camp on $32,000. It's alarming. And then you see a guy like Floyd Mayweather go out and pay him $300 million to dance around and hide from getting hit. I can't stand it. So my long-winded answer to your question is, if this benefits the fighters in any way, in a positive fashion, then I'm all for it.
I had to get that in for you, Brian. Had to get that in for you. All right, guys. Wonderful. Yeah, let's go back into this, guys. UFC 114. We're going to go to the main card, guys. And listen, it started out pretty good. And frankly, Alejandro defeats Andre Sukunta. I believe I said that right. Split decision. I'm not sure I agreed with that, but you know, listen, it sounds about right. Sam Alvey, guys, defeats Sugar Rashad Evans. And I got to tell you guys, and you guys read this on my notes. Listen, Sugar has lost four straight, but here's the thing that gets to me, Brian. In January of 2012, and I know what you're thinking, that was 5 years ago, but keep in mind, he's only had a handful of fights in 5 years, right? With the knee injuries, et cetera. January 2012, Sugar was 17-1-1. Now, since his fight with John Jones, guys, he's gone 2-6. 2-6, four straight losses. Brian, we go to you. Sam Alvey versus Sugar. What'd you see there? And is it time for Sugar to hang it up?
Yeah, that's a great question. Whenever you talk about should a fighter hang it up, it's such a tedious conversation to have. I actually watched, obviously I watched that fight, but the next day I went back and I watched Rashid versus Chuck when he knocked out Chuck. To look at Sugar Rashid when he's 205 pounds versus what he looks like at 185, he looks smaller than Sam Alvey. And when you're light heavyweight coming down to middleweight, normally you look bigger than the middleweights. To me, he looks smaller than Sam Alvey. I don't think he should fight as a middleweight. If you go back and look at him at 205er, he's not dwarfed by other 205ers. His athleticism is outstanding. His hand speed is outstanding. His wrestling is outstanding. I think I get the feeling he's too weak at 185 because he shouldn't have looked that small to Sam Alvey. Granted, his record shows a huge swoon, but he's not taking massive knockout losses. You know, he's losing split decisions. So I'm not at the point yet where I start to worry about his safety and he should retire. I would like to see him go back up to a 205. If you just go back and look at his body versus when he fought Liddell versus he looks at Sam Alvey, it's the same frame, just so much smaller.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was waiting for you to get in there. I apologize. Okay, so I have a couple of concerns. First of all, I don't know why you put Rashad Evans on a Mexico City card where he has to get not only used to cutting that weight back down to 185, but he has to deal with the altitude. I just don't understand why you do that. I had concerns going into the fight about it. I still have concerns about it. When we talk about Rashad Evans having a hard time, you know, since he fought John Jones took his soul. He did. I mean, if you remember the build up to that fight, you know, it was a grudge match, ex-teammate, you know, I'm better than you. John Jones took something from Rashad Evans that day, and he was never the same after. And he will not be the same after, because that's just what happens in the fight game. I don't want to retire people, but I don't think that Rashad Evans needs to continue fighting. I mean, I've said this on previous shows, guys, last week. I just don't think that Rashad Evans needs to continue fighting. I mean, he's got a budding career in, you know, either being on the booth in LA or being on, you know, like I said to you guys, maybe it was on Thursday, you know, he could even be, you know, one of the three in the live broadcast. I have no problem with that. I mean, if he can keep up and if he can learn the skill, I would accept Rashad Evans in the booth because he seems very educated. I just don't think he needs to continue fighting anymore because with the way the business is going, with the way the empire is running this business nowadays, Tony, I think that Rashad would be a good piece for them, you know, in some kind of broadcasting role.
I played that a little late, but Brian, let's move up and wait.
I was watching Rogue One the other day, and I was like, you know, can you see how many times these people kill each other? I was like, this is what's happening right now. It's kill or be killed in the UFC. Sorry, Tony. Empire theme. Crank it back up.
For roster spots, no less now.
Exactly.
Wait, you know, the one thing that we're not talking about that we're going to have to, that we're going to see, and I don't want to get into a tangent. We can talk about this after. Let's get through this card. But with the Dana White contender series and everything that's coming out, guys, with the top 26, there's going to be a lot of fighters cut, and I'm curious to know where they land. But let's move up. Let's finish this conversation then, because we can go all day. To the featherweight we went, Brian, Humberto Bandone defeated Martin Bravo in one of the most brutal knee, I think an accidental knee, honestly, because I know he meant to throw it, but I don't think he meant to throw it with such force. And it's one of those things, guys, that they teach you when you're going to grab a knee or when you're going for a takedown or even when you're trying to parry, your neck, your face should go into the opposite direction of the arm. Guess what happened? The opposite, right? Head went right, knee to the same direction he was going for the knee, and guess what happened? He was out, guys, and the most frightening part about this, I don't know how many people know about this, but allegedly, and mind you, listen, I don't have any sources on this, I'm just going off of what I read, but allegedly, he stopped breathing, or it looked like he stopped breathing his chest for about 10 to 15 seconds. So whether or not that in fact is even possible, I don't know, but that was pretty frightening. Brian, we go to you. What did you see there? And obviously you've seen a lot of fights. Is that one of the most brutal knockouts that you've seen in quite some time?
Yeah, it absolutely was. It was frightening to watch. I love the sport. I love the controlled violence, but I don't like to see fighters get knocked out like that. I believe his feet were flexed for, like you said, well over 15 to 20 seconds. His hands were sticking straight up in the air. That I don't like to see. It was a frightening knockout. I hope the young man is okay. But when I talk to people about UFC, there, I was like, well, it's too brutal for me. And when they say that, I don't argue very hard because, you know what, for some people, it probably is too brutal. And that may, for the casual fan, have been too brutal. I really hope the kid's okay. It was a frightening knockout.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to introduce me again. Sorry. I'll just continue to answer. Yeah, no. I thought the same thing. I mean, we've talked about judges and refs, and you know whether we can get a consistent way of doing things. And I think that a lot of refs, again, are trying to give these guys the benefit of the doubt. And we, like we saw in the Daniel Cormier fight with John Jones, if we go too far, if we get too much damage, we see scary things, you know what I mean? So we need to have the refs being there. We need them to be in charge of the fight, and we need them to, you know, like Mark Goddard, I had a problem with what he did with I think it was Betchkohea and Holly Holm. But now looking back on it, it makes sense. You know, come on, guys, get it going. And then when something happened, he finished it. You know what I mean? It wasn't like I'll wait for five hits after he needs to be. Like, I think Daniel Cormier took at least five to six too many hits. Maybe this happened in this fight as well. Big knee comes out, guy goes down, and maybe the ref is like, okay, I'll give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because if I stop this too early, everybody's going to lose their freaking minds. And I think this is what is happening with these refs. They just don't want to make a mistake because the bright lights are on. Again, like you said, Brian, I hope that Bravo okay, and I'm sure he will be once he gets off, you know, away from the fight. They have the best of the best. The UFC has the best of the best healthcare team. That's what they're there for. Again, we have to take into account we're fighting pretty much near the highest place, habitable place on the planet. Mexico City is very, 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 very high up there. And not only that, it has a S ton of pollution. So maybe that's why it took a long time for him to recover. And I'm just hoping for that. But was it too late of a stoppage? Yeah, probably. But again, it's a hard line for these guys that are in the octagon.
Guys, is Roy Hibbert, the former basketball player, if you guys know who he is, the American Jamaican basketball player who played, gosh, he played with Indianapolis, et cetera. He keeps calling that ref, mini Brock Lesnar. Was he the ref, guys, that was there? Gary Copeland?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't the little Brock Lesnar that you're thinking of. I've gone back and watched the fight. I'm not 100% sure if the ref was out of position, but he was on the other side of the ring. And when right. the knee lands and Bravo goes down, he does come running as fast as he can. I wonder when he's coming across the cage to stop it, is he yelling voice commands? Do the fighters listen to a voice command of a referee? Stop, or do they have to wait for contact? I want to say there was only one additional punch landed after the knee.
Two.
I'm very critical. Okay, so two landed. So I don't think the ref did a horrendous job because he was across the ring. I'm very critical when a ref lets it go too long. Like, I was upset with the amount of punches that Jones landed on DC after.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. I thought it was too many too. I can't really beat up the ref on this one because I think he got there as fast as he could. But I would be curious to know, as he's sprinting towards the fighter, is he yelling voice commands? That I would like to know.
Well, we do know for a fact that McCarthy does give voice commands. Proteus, did you get any audio on that one?
No. I the fighter is trained to fight until he's, you know, pretty much pulled off, as you mentioned earlier on, Tony. So even if they're giving voice commands, I don't know if that even registers because, you mean, you're in punch face mode, right? Like, you're just punching face. So I don't know if that even matters.
Well, we know one thing for a fact. I don't think Jermaine Durandamy listens to any sort of voice commands from the ref.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah.
Nothing. All right.
I would almost say she's deaf.
That's right. Right. Oh my gosh. It could be a language barrier. All right, guys, let's go to the welterweight. We went, guys. Nico Price defeats Alan Jouban, much to poor Pam's chagrin. Brutally, guys. And talk about someone. You know what? I thought that was an appropriate stoppage because Jouban was completely out. We go to you, Brian. Nico Price defeated Jouban. Anything on this?
Yes. Nico Price, I had mentioned earlier in the show that I sort of make a list of fighters I'd like to see again. Yep. And Mr. Price fell onto that column. I thought the stoppage was good. I thought it was an appropriate stoppage. He was rocked. So, again, I would much rather see a ref stop it a tad too early than a tad too late. I do want to see Mr. Price again. He's full of personality. I love the personality that came along with it. I enjoyed the fight.
Proteus, we do know, I believe you told me, that Nico Price is a buddy with your favorite, Platinum Mike Perry. What's the view about Nico Price?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I do believe that that's his boy. And like I was saying on the pick show, I thought Nico Price had a very mean look in his eye. I just thought that... this guy is something, you know, nobody to be messed with. And I thought that he was going to take this fight down. And it's not a surprise to me that he took Alan Jouban down. I mean, you know, and like you said, Tony, complete, great stoppage. It was just, you know, Nico Price looking tough, man. He's looking tough. Watch out, everybody. And welterweight, he's coming.
That's right, kid. All right, guys, let's move up to my favorite subject. And listen, I'm not going to play this because it's so overplayed, Proteus. We do this all the time when we start talking about the women's fights, and of course we start playing. Oh, there it goes. Never mind. Alexa Grasso defeats Randa Markos, the redheaded, and I mean red, not even like orange. I mean red, like blood red, like the blood that was coming out of her poor nose, I think. Alexa Grasso defeats Randa Markos, guys, via split decision. And I thought it could have gone either way, clearly, because they were the home crowd. I think Grasso probably got that, but I still think Grasso is taking some notes from Rashad Evans and leaving a lot on the table, guys, just like not letting go. We go to you, Brian. Any thoughts on Alexa Grasso defeating the Quiet Storm, Randa Markos?
I don't have a ton of thoughts. It was a nice scrap. I thought they both came to fight. Good scrap. That's pretty much all I can say.
Proteus.
Excellent breakdown. Thank you, Brian. No, I agree. I mean, they both seem to come to fight. Honestly, I thought that Markos did enough to win this fight. I don't know if it was a hometown rub or anything like that.
For sure.
Well, I mean, it could have gone either way, Tony. And if we are to believe that Grasso was diminished in any way, you know what I mean? I just don't enjoy this continual, like Tyron Woodley. Let's just go back in time a bit. Tyron Woodley is coming up with all kinds of injuries that he had for 214. Now he's got a hamstring, he's got a shoulder problem. I mean, yes, I know that it's a serious problem that, you know, Alexa Grasso had a TUI. But I mean, I just don't like hearing all of this reports afterwards. You know what I mean? It's just like we're ready for the fight, ready for the fight. If we can't have the fight, let's just not have the fight. Like if somebody's, you know, on antibiotics for any kind of problem and they're compromised, why do we want to see that fight? You know what I mean? I'm getting off on a little bit of a tangent here, Brian. I apologize, but I just don't understand. If Grasso was indeed, you know, compromised, why do we even have the fight? You know what I mean? I know we need to deliver a certain amount of fights to the cable providers, but she did end up getting the hometown rub, as we have said. But I don't know, man. I thought Markos did enough there. It's just tough to see this, you know what I mean? Like, Markos performed well. It was a close fight, granted. And if Grasso wasn't compromised, maybe it would have been a whitewash, like I had said it would be. That's not what happened. And, you know, I just don't think that we need to have fighters fighting when they're compromised. If you've got an injury or if you've got some kind of infection where you're on antibiotics, have you been on antibiotics, and would you want to go have a cage fight?
No, sir.
Right, exactly. So I don't know if we need to see this, Tony. I really don't know if we need to see fighters that are, you know, if they're going to come out afterwards and say, you know what, I was on antibiotics, I probably shouldn't have taken that fight. Comes back to what Brian was saying. Maybe these fighters are not making enough money, Tony.
Yeah, and clearly I don't think it was a thing of that she wasn't in shape, because if you saw the weigh-in, I mean, she had an eight-pack going. So, mind you, she's very young. Yeah. Allegedly, Grasso was on her monthly visit. She did have the UTI and was on antibiotics. But even with all that, guys, and I followed Alexa Grasso probably since the start of her Invicta career. Yes, sir.
Sorry, I'm sorry to bust in here, but UTI for a woman can happen at any point in time. It doesn't have to be at that point in time of the month. It can happen anytime. And again, it's a very, very debilitating thing for a woman. And why would she need to be fighting if she's trying to battle something like this? Sorry, that bothers me. I mean, I've lived with a woman for 12 years. I mean, that kind of thing would knock somebody out. I don't know why she need to be in a cage fight.
Yeah, and again, I'm just reporting what was reported, but either way, no, guys, and Brian, of course, a father of two girls, and I'm a father of a daughter. So listen, I totally feel you there, Proteus. But either way, I still think she's leaving. That's not the same Alexa Grasso that I saw at Invicta. So I think some aggressiveness. Maybe she's maybe the UFC limelight right now for her age is just a little too much. But it just doesn't look like the same fighter that I saw. All right, let's move up, guys.
I'm sorry, Tony. I just want to break in here and give you a question. Do we need to see a reformulation of what we're doing right now then? If that's the kind of thing that we're seeing right now, Tony, I'm sorry. This is just something that came to my brain. If we're seeing that the ceiling for certain fighters is, you know, where it is, do we need to see this kind of, you know, fill out a little bit more? And are we seeing, you know, like the lighter weights or the lower or minor leagues of MMA?
Yeah, I think we are, Brian.
Yeah, it's a tough subject. It's a touchy subject. They're both very good fighters. They're top of the food chain athletes. I just don't think that fight should have been co-main event. I would rather have seen it lower on the card. I just don't think their skill level was worthy of a co-main event fight.
Well, and I'll be honest with you, I thought the Sugar and Alvey fight was way too low on the fight card, in my opinion. So that's, listen, I think you guys are fair to say that. Let's go to the flyweight we go. Brian's favorite division and mine. To the flyweight we go, guys. Sergio S.P. Pettis defeats Brandon McLovin Moreno via unanimous decision. And boy, I allegedly, guys, this is what's coming out, that allegedly Moreno was injured, couldn't throw a right hand due to injury. To me, and I should have seen this a mile away, Proteus, he's had 6 fights in 16 months. Let me repeat that. 6 fights in 16 months. Brian, I'm going to throw to you. Brian, what'd you see here in your favorite division, the flyweight, Sergio Pettis defeating Brandon Moreno?
Well, I can tell you, Mr. Moreno is loaded with personality. I enjoyed his walkout. You know, I enjoyed the build-up to the fight. I was very impressed with Sergio Pettis' resilience in the first round. To have a fighter on your back for, boy, I want to say well over 2.5 minutes and fight that off and then come back and clearly pretty much win every other round. It was a gutty performance by Pettis. He's a very skilled fighter. I thought I heard them mention that they may be talking about him for a title shot. He's nowhere near a title shot. DJ is just head and shoulders above everybody else in this division. Granted, they got to give him someone to fight, but I don't see Pettis beating the champion.
Proteus, let me ask you this. And Brian's right. They were talking about Pettis next in line after, I forgot who's fighting DJ, forgive me. But
Ray Borg.
Ray Borg. Is he ready, Proteus? I agree with Brian. I guess it doesn't make a difference who you throw at DJ right now, but gosh, I don't think the kid's ready.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's ready at this point. Like Sergio pointed out on the outtakes or the post-fight interviews that you put out, Tony, on which you did a great job on. Thank you very much for doing that. As he pointed out, you know, he's got a lot to work on. But, I mean, if he gets that title shot next, he's going to take it. I mean, we have a fight to see still. Like you guys were mentioning that, you know, Borg still has to have that title shot. Is he ready next? I don't think so. Was it an overwhelming performance that said to me, yes, this guy needs a title shot? No, not really, but more than anybody else. I mean, if we're to believe that Brandon Moreno was, you know, compromised, he couldn't throw that power shot. You know what, guys? We both have two arms. You know what I mean? Everybody in the world has two arms. Well, not everybody in the world. Let me retract that.
people with two arms and two legs are able to throw two arms and two legs. I think it's Sergio Pettis is a work in progress. And I said this, you know, on Wednesday, you know, it's just a work in progress, guys. I mean, I don't know where he's at. It's too early to tell. As we have mentioned a lot in this show, I mean, we're seeing a lot of content. We're seeing a lot of fighters. We're seeing a lot of fights play out, and where everybody falls, where the chips may fall, is to be determined. I would like to see Sergio Pettis have another fight. If he's next for DJ, he's next for DJ. Who knows if DJ wins that next fight? Ray Borg may shock the world. We don't know, right? We can assume that he's not going to shock the world, but he may shock the world. So I don't know, guys. I mean,
if I could add one more thing, both of these fighters, I believe they're both 23, and I think they're going to see each other. I think they're going to see each other in the cage again. It's not a deep division. Their ages tell me that they'll see each other again. You know, this is not my favorite weight class, and I may just be biased because I'm a big person. I'm about 6'5", 220, 230, depending on what week it is.
Oh, you and Proteus are in the tall guy division.
So I struggle with the 125ers. The athleticism is off the chart. They do things that I can't do. It just, I have a hard time getting into that division. But I recognize the greatness of DJ. I can see it. He's too fast for Sergio. He's too powerful for Sergio. He's too well-rounded for Sergio. I like Sergio. I like the kid. He's got a lot of talent. It's just no way, way too early. I think all these guys have to wait for DJ to go away, and then the top eight contenders will pass that title around for the next couple of years until somebody else rises above.
Guys, let me ask you this. Pettis, and we're talking Sergio, and I stole this from Anik, but Pettis actually now has more UFC wins than Sergio has more UFC wins now than Anthony Pettis. If I stole that correctly from Anik. Now, keep in mind, all of Sergio Pettis's UFC wins, guys, have come via decision. Is this, Proteus, you are one that really gives a lot of weight, and I'm not trying to be funny, to the flyweight division and to the bantamweight division and all these other divisions. Guys, are we getting a bit too diluted? I was going to bring this up at the end, but we literally are actually at the end. But is this now too diluted, guys? Let's think about this. With the Dana White, and we broached this subject a little earlier, but with the Dana White Contender Series, with the tough, another new divisions and other divisions coming into play, guys, is the UFC, and I can't say we, is the UFC now too diluted? And is this a good thing to competitors like Bellator? Proteus?
I think that we're not really too diluted. I think that we're just trying to find our way in the world. Are we putting on too many fights? I don't know. Is the roster in the UFC too bloated? Maybe. And does that particularly shine favorably on Bellator? I think, yeah, it does do that. I mean, any kind of person that comes out of the UFC, any kind of fighter, whether it be male or female, they can Bellator or any other promotion can say former UFC contender. You know what I mean? So that branding of the UFC is so strong in the sport, as it should be. I mean, that's not a secret to anybody. I think what we're seeing right now, Tony, with the Contender Series is that we don't need the Ultimate Fighter anymore. We really don't. Yeah. The sport has gone to a point where you can just have guys fighting to contend, to get a UFC contract, and we don't need all the BS that comes along with the Ultimate Fighter. I just watch the fights. If I were to watch The Ultimate Fighter, I would just watch the fights. I don't give an S about what happens in the house. They could spend all their time away from each other and just come and fight each other. I don't care. I just want to see the fights. And I think you guys can agree with me. I'm going to get off my high horse and let you guys speak.
Nope, Proteus, Brian, I 100% agree with you. Go ahead, sorry.
Go, Brian. Go ahead. Last point before we close. Go for it.
Well, you talked about, is it too diluted, right? What I like most about MMA is on an MMA card, they're going to give you 12, 13, 14, 15 fights. On a boxing card, they're going to give you 4 or 5. The MMA world, if you're watching a slow fight or a boring fight, it's over in 3 rounds. You're watching a boxing match that's boring or slow, you got to sit through that thing for 10 rounds,
correct,
12 rounds. So if we get stuck with a card or a fight that's not the greatest, you don't have to wait very long. And I've watched some fights, and I think that I can, I can see how this fight's going to go. The next thing, a flying knee comes out of nowhere, or somebody grabs their back, or a Kimura. I don't think it's too diluted just yet, because when the weekend comes around and there's no fights on, I don't know what to do with myself. So I'm still good with it.
I feel you.
Well, one thing we can do is we can always watch the Tyron Woodley versus Maya fight again.
Yeah. If I run
all right,
Andy,
guys, let's get the heck out of here, guys. Brian, great having you on here. Man, I'll tell you, I was a big fan of yours, because every single time he's on, he takes my point. So I call into the MMA Junkie. Brian's right on for me, and darn it, he takes my point. All right, let's get out of here. Guys, do we have a song of the week? I'll go first. My song of the week, guys, The Who's Eminence Front. I love that song. Eminence Front by The Who. We go to you, Brian. Do you have a song of the week?
I am. I'm going to go with the Gale song from The Lumineers.
Ooh.
Great song.
Proteus.
Yes, sir. I'm going to go with Light off of her Little Machine album. It's called Feeding. And you know what, Tony? It feels good. Thank you, Tony.
That's right. All right. Twitter follow of the week, because of the top 26 coming up, and Proteus, cue the music. We follow Rachel Ostovich. Rachel Ostovich. Oh my gosh. Cue the music. Brian, we go to you. Do you have a Twitter follow of the week?
Yep. I'm going off the board, and I'm telling everybody to follow Jim Brewer, because he's the funniest human on the planet.
Nice. Prado, before we close, your Twitter follow of the week.
Yes, sir. I'm not going to ask you guys to follow him for the rest of the week, but my boy, Danny Austin, threw down a show before he went on vacation. I have to thank him very much. Danny Austin, _9, Post Media fame. Thank you, Tony.
All right, guys, let's get out of here. We, of course, follow us at Another MMA Cast. Wednesdays, usually, we have Smack My Picks up. We will not have it this week because we don't have a card. We will have, of course, the McGregor. We'll do something special with Angelo Reyes on the McGregor Mayweather front. Follow, of course, Proteus at Proadios. Follow Marco at MaldoMarco. Follow Pam at PamDoraBox, 2 X's at the end. Follow me at I'm DJ Tony. Don't follow Brian from Boston because he does not do Twitter. But Brian, of course, our boy. Proteus, let's get out of here, pro.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Take care. Let's get out of here, guys. See ya.